Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
This is episode one. We also did a quick separate intro episode if you want to make a bit of background on the book and why we're doing this podcast. So right now we're just going to jump straight into chapter one. I will say, though, if you do find this a bit dull to start with, possibly try skipping ahead to episode 3 and see how you find it that. We haven't recorded episode 3 yet, but I'm pretty confident that that's the chapter that will sell this to people.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. It's not going to be dull. Dragon Ball was based on this. It's going to be great.
Chapter 1 is fantastic. Chapter 1 and 2 aren't dull. Should I re-record that? Should I, like, sell that better?
Yeah, leave it.
Okay, chapter 1 and 2 aren't dull, but chapter 3 is fantastic.
Okay, I'm very, very much looking forward to that one.
But yeah, now chapter 1. Journey to the West starts off with a poem. There's many, many poems in this book. I won't be reading them. But it starts with a poem discussing the creation of the world from the era of chaos and basically says, if you want to understand the workings of the universe and time, you should read this book. To quote the last two lines, to know cyclic time's work, if that's your quest, read Tale of Woes Dispelled on Journey West. It's making big promises.
Yeah, I think we all need to regain an understanding of linear time right now. I also really love how many myths and legends across the ages begin with there was chaos first.
Mm.
I like the idea of just chaotic nothingness rather than still nothingness for some reason. But mythos is great. It's great.
Mm. Yeah, and the book does immediately go into a bit of an info dump on Buddhist cosmology.
Ambulous.
Yeah, so as you know, we divide time into 12 epochs. Zi, Chao, Yin, Mao, Chen, Si, Wu, Wei, Shen, Yu, Zhu, and Hai. As you know, and each one lasts 10,800 years, and I'm a bit worried about losing people if we don't get to the magic talking monkey fairly quickly, so I think I'll...
I like this. How many years? 10,000?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I mean, that's plenty of breathing time.
And there's 12 epochs, cool. So and then it kind of goes back to an era of darkness.
I'm liking learning about a cosmology that I'm not familiar with. I don't know, how long till the era of darkness?
I think it goes into talking about, like, the universe is created in Z, and which is, like, the first one, and then the world was created in Chu, and then living things were created in Yin, and then it kind of stopped. So I think we might still be in Yin.
Oh, cool.
So
there's hope.
So we still got a whole, like, 9 eras left before we get back to the Era of Darkness.
Okay, cool. Depending on how you feel right now, that might be a positive or a negative. I'm not sure. Anyway, yay, new cosmology to learn about.
Please. Yeah, and I've made, like, a little footnote for that. So I think I have, like, a little footnote section at the end of my script. So we can come back to this at the end of the episode.
Fabulous.
But our actual story starts off in the eastern continent of Purvavide, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong, but if I apologize for my pronunciations every time I say something, I'm going to be here a long time. But in Purvavide, there is a country called Auli, in which stands the Flower Fruit Mountain. It's a beautiful, magical land, and all kinds of animals and creatures live there, including dragons, phoenixes, and unicorns. And put an asterisk on that unicorn as well, because I'm going to get back to that too.
Ooh, is it one of the scary Lovecraftian type of unicorns?
No, but I was curious about it, but I do want to kind of skip to the point a little bit, so we'll come back to it if that's okay.
Okay. I have a brief confession to make, if that's okay. Mm. Feel free to edit this out. But when I was younger and still very much pretending to be a girl, I was a horse girl.
We have all sinned.
Yeah. It's not a part of my life I was proud of, but I was. I didn't have my own, obviously. Like, I used to kind of muck out stables for cheap lessons. But yeah, horses are really not the most stable of creatures, and the idea of one with basically a sword on its head should strike fear into the heart of all. Not to be confused with the colloquial unicorn who, I don't know if that strikes fear into your heart. Possibly if you keep getting matched with couples on Tinder and looking for one.
Yeah, I think being that unicorn is the bigger fear.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
If only you had a sword on your head which to stab them.
Yeah, that would be, it would be a nice idea sometimes.
But in any case, on that mountain, the Flower Fruit Mountain, there was a stone that was 36 feet 5 inches high and 24 feet across that existed since the creation of the world. But one day the stone split open, giving birth to a stone egg, which is about the size of a playing ball, it says. I'm just going to picture that as a football. So, you know, maybe it meant a big, smaller ball than that. I don't know.
Float your boat.
Yep. And then one day the stone transformed into a fully developed monkey, stone monkey. And when the stone monkey, who is our main character, came to life, his eyes flashed with two beams of golden light so bright they were seen all the way in heaven.
Lasers! 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 I don't know if you listened to the intro. Quiva did tell me a bunch of things about this book, and I forgot almost everything except for the lasers.
Yes, the lasers, which will never be mentioned again. I'm sorry, this is the only time this happens.
I'll take what I can get in regards to the monkeys with lasers in their eyes.
But yeah, the...
Be not dull! Not dull! Monkeys with lasers in their eyes!
The lasers were so bright, they were seen all the way in heaven. Heaven, in this case, being where the gods live, not the afterlife. The Jade Emperor, who was basically the king of the gods in like this cosmology, sent out two lads to have a look what was going on. Their names are Thousand Mild Eye and Fair Wind Ear, which I think are great names. And they just they reported back about the stone monkey, and the Jade Emperor decides they don't have to worry about whatever's happening on the world below. It's literally beneath them.
That's fair.
Yeah, we'll come back to heaven later on in another chapter. But for the moment, the stone monkey continues on his way. He starts exploring the mountain. He makes friends with all the other animals living there. He's a bit of a theme, actually. He gets in trouble for that, actually, later on, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So one morning, it's a hot day, and he's playing with all the other monkeys in a stream. And they get curious, and they decide to explore and find out the source of the stream. And they follow the stream uphill, and they find this huge waterfall. And they get really excited, and they want to know what's on the other side of the waterfall, because, you know, they've played a lot of video games. There's always something behind the waterfall.
Always.
Yeah. And one of them shouts out, okay, if anyone can go behind the waterfall and come back without hurting themselves, they get to be their king. And they all agree to this. And I think that's the fair system of government, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than... random women distributing swords from a lake, to quote Monty Python.
Yeah, so naturally the stone monkey declares he's going in, he jumps through. And on the other side he lands on a large iron bridge inside a huge cave. And there's a big sign up saying the Water Curtain Cave. And on the other side of the bridge, there's a huge mansion with a garden. It's fully furnished, there's still food on the dining table, and it's big enough for thousands of monkeys to live in.
Okay, very Mary Celeste. Is that ever explained?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Like, they go to the trouble of mentioning there was still food on the table, and no character ever wonders, like, why this was built or who was there before.
I'm getting some horror movie protagonist vibes here.
There's
not even protagonist, but like side character who gets killed first.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that seem like foreshadowing and then just never come up again.
Fair.
It's, you know, it's a 400-year-old book. They didn't have such strict ideas of narrative building. But in any case, the stone monkey goes back through to all the other monkeys and shows them what's behind the cave. And they immediately start taking everything that isn't nailed down and fighting over all of it until they're all exhausted.
Well, what else are you going to do?
At this point, the stone monkey quotes Confucius at them. He says, "If a man lacks trustworthiness, it is difficult to know what he can accomplish," and says that they promised that whoever went through the waterfall would be king. So, I'm your king now.
Fair, fair. You said it.
Yeah. They all agree. Declare long live the king. And his first act on becoming king is saying that he was no longer to be called the stone monkey. He is now the handsome monkey king.
Handsome monkey king.
Handsome is suddenly here, yeah. It's part of his title.
Okay. Yeah, this is concerning. obviously we haven't seen leaders with that kind of ego before. This is an entirely foreign concept to me. But I feel like declaring yourself, say, the handsome monkey king or a very stable genius is not a good sign. Somehow, this has implications.
He's not the most humble of guys.
I am now questioning the method of who gets through the waterfall and lives as a system of government. Not gonna lie, it sounded great, but now I'm concerned.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's not.
Okay.
And you know, the monkeys, they have a pretty nice setup now. They live in the cave for 300 or 400 years until one day the handsome monkey king has a bit of a midlife crisis. They're in the middle of a feast and he just suddenly starts crying.
Okay, I feel like we should point out the midlife crisis of 400 years. So this is a very long-lived monkey.
Yeah, I don't know if all... I think he's living that long. I'm not sure if all the other monkeys are living that long. He might just be outliving everyone. I'm not really sure. He is made of stone. But the other monkeys ask what's wrong and... He kind of says, you know, things are good right now, but one day I'm going to die and I don't want to die. And life is just pointless. If you're just going to die, this is shit. And I mean,
existential crisis.
We've all been there. But one monkey comes forward and says there are beings that are immortal. And there are Buddhas, immortals, and holy sages are the three types of immortal creatures. And they live in the Jambudvipa continent far away. The Monkey King immediately decides he's leaving. He's going to go search for the secrets of immortality and just abandon all his subjects.
Again, this method of governance... starting to sound not great, not gonna lie.
They don't seem too upset. Maybe they just kind of want to get rid of him.
Fair. He sounds like a prick.
The next day, they have a huge feast to see him off. The feast lasts all day, so he actually ends up leaving the day after that, which isn't important, just I found kind of funny.
Yeah. Guy got caught up.
Yeah, they just partied so hard that they forgot to, like, he forgot to actually leave.
Stone monkeys get hangovers. You heard it here first.
So he boards a raft and shoves off to Jambudvipa, and he just gets a nice strong southeast wind and it brings him all the way there. No issues at all, actually. He lands at a beach and just finds people fishing, going about their business. He immediately makes a huge ruckus, scares everyone off, grabs one guy and steals his clothes to disguise himself as a human. And, he spends the next 8 or 9 years swaggering around the continent looking for immortals, and the translation does use the word swagger.
I love it. I'm picturing a Staying Alive, but not Staying Alive, a Bee Gees song of some description playing in the background.
But yeah, he spends 8 or 9 years wandering around, doesn't find any immortals, and doesn't really find anything, but just gets very judgmental. He starts to think that people are all just greedy and all they want is fortune and fame, as opposed to him who just wants to live forever, which is totally not selfish at all.
And he sounds like one of those people who just goes to India for their gap year and somehow comes back.
Oh my god,
that's worse than before.
Oh my god, that's the entire plot of this book. That's basically the entire plot of this book.
He was a trailblazer for white guys with dreadlocks.
Oh, wow, okay. I guess technically he's a bald Chinese monkey, but...
Okay, well...
But yeah, God. In any case, he swaggers all the way to the other side of the continent and decides he'll just go to the next continent over and look there instead, which he does. And for a while, Steel just doesn't find any immortals to learn from. And one day he comes across a huge mountain and decides to just climb it and enjoy the view. So as he's looking out over the scenery, he hears someone sing a song about meeting immortals, and it piques his interest, so he goes to find the singer. And he finds a woodcutter singing away to himself, and he asks about the song, and the woodcutter tells him that one of his neighbors is actually an immortal sage who taught him the song. And Monkey asks, like, well, if you know an immortal, why are you, like, not learning to be immortal yourself? Why are you collecting firewood? And the woodcutter explains that his dad died while he was young, and it's just him looking after his aging mother, and their land is really poor, they can't really grow anything, so he just spends his time collecting firewood to sell to buy enough rice to feed them both. And he gives Monkey directions to Sabote's place. Sabote is the name of the immortal.
Okay.
Monkey insists the woodcutter should go with them and they can both be rewarded. And woodcutter calls him an idiot and says, I literally just explained why I can't.
I'm definitely getting the privileged kid in India vibe again. Why can't you find enlightenment? Because I don't have money and I have shit to do.
Yeah, pretty much. And Monkey just immediately leaves him and never, like, speaks to him again. So, yeah. Monkey follows his direction. He finds Sabote's house. Above it, there's a sign declaring it the Cave of Slanting Moon and Three Stars in the Mountain of Mind and Heart. Monkey's too anxious to knock on the door, though, and instead he climbs a nearby tree and just starts playing to relax a bit. I think we've all been there as well.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, someone opens the door and shouts, who's making all that noise? And Monkey jumps down and introduces himself and says he wants to learn to be immortal. And the person who answers the door isn't Sabote, he's one of his students, but he leads Monkey to where Sabote is giving a lecture. Monkey kowtows to him and is like, I want to be your pupil. Sabote asks him where he's from, and Monkey tells him that he came all the way from the continent of Purvavide. And Sabote immediately calls him a liar and tells him to get out, asking how he could possibly have gotten from so far away. And Monkey says, no, I did. It took me 10 years to get here. And Sabote's like, oh, okay, that seems reasonable. And he calms down a bit.
That checks out.
Yeah. So he asks Monkey, what's your surname? And Monkey says back, I don't have a temper.
Okay.
It's a pun. There's a little footnote explaining it. I'm sure it's a really good pun, but apparently surname and temper are both pronounced like jing. Puns, hard to translate. So Sabote says, I'm not talking about your temper, I want to know what your family name is. And Monkey explains he doesn't have any because he was born from a rock. Sabote, a man who is skeptical of the concept of intercontinental travel, has no trouble believing this whatsoever.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting belief system.
Yeah, so Sabote decides he's going to give the Monkey King a surname. And we already just had a bit of Chinese punnery. And the conversation that follows is even more incomprehensible unless you're familiar with the language, the writing system, and something that I think is a philosophical concept that's name-dropped that the footnotes don't even explain. So I think I'll just quote that whole paragraph, if that's okay. Though your features are not the most attractive, you do resemble a pygnolia-eating monkey, whose son. This gives me the idea of taking a surname for you from your appearance. I intend to call you by the name Hu. If I drop the animal radical from this word, what's left is a compound made of the two characters Gu and Yue. Gu means aged, and Yue means female, but an aged female cannot reproduce, therefore it is better to give you the surname of Sun. If I drop the animal radical from this word, what we have left is a compound of Ji and Ji. Ji means boy and Ji means baby, and that name exactly accords with the fundamental doctrine of the baby boy, so your surname will be Sun.
Wow, that's so he's this teacher is laying down the law, and so I'm not having your arrogant shit. You are no longer the handsome I'm humbling you in front of me, and now you're either an old lady or a little boy, and also not very pleasant to look at.
I never even thought of that until I until I heard you laughing and realized what you were laughing at, that he immediately just calls him or says that you're not the most attractive after he called himself the handsome monkey king.
You are not in your waterfall cave anymore, and I am having none of your bullshit.
I don't think he actually calls himself the handsome monkey king to Sabote, but yeah, that's kind of funny. But yeah, that after that kind of incomprehensible paragraph, the gist of it is his surname is Sun, which is basically just means monkey.
Okay.
The Monkey King is delighted to have a surname, and he asks for a given name as well. And Sabote calls him Wukong. And so we said in the intro that means something like wake to the void or aware of emptiness or something like that. It's a weird thing to translate. But yes, he's given the name Sun Wukong, and right. He becomes a student of Sabote.
So his name is Void Woke.
Yeah. His name is Monkey Void Woke.
Okay, so you've got the concept of kind of humbling yourself before nothingness.
I don't know. I honestly, I couldn't tell you what the name really means.
It sounds cool anyway.
There's probably like papers written just on that name.
I have not read any.
Nor have I. But in any case, yeah, the monkey, the stone monkey becomes the handsome monkey king, becomes Sun Wukong, and becomes Sabote's student. And that is the end of chapter one.
Okay, very cool.
Not that much action yet, but we're
there was a monkey with lasers! What more do you want out of action? I'm happy. I'm very happy with the action in that story.
Nice.
And I'm very, very happy that the dude with dreadlocks and India protege got his comeuppance from, is like, no, if you want to learn this shit, you are going to get rid of that ridiculous ego and listen to me.
Yeah. Doesn't really work.
I do feel there may be like a little bit of interspecies racism at play there.
That's true.
Which is odd. I've got my failed English student cap on right now.
He will get called ugly an awful lot in this book.
Oh no. Oof.
I never even connected to the fact that he literally names himself the handsome monkey king. So maybe a bit of I don't know. I was going to say compensation, but that's a bit of a mean thing to call it. Trying to assert himself.
Character development sort of thing. I understand from what you said there that it does not take.
Oh yeah, he's a prick.
Okay, fair.
Like, yeah, he's the main character. He's also a giant prick.
Awesome.
I did promise everyone's favorite part of listening to a podcast, footnotes.
Yay!
So I skipped over the bit at the start where it goes through the kind of world and explains like the continents and all the stuff. So there are four continents. Jambudvipa in the south, Purvavide in the east, Uttarakura in the north, and Aparagodania in the west. Those are Pali names. The translation doesn't like strict to using Chinese names for everything. For Buddhist concepts, it tends to use whatever they're generally called in English normally, rather than transliterating to Chinese. And I was kind of curious about this kind of conception of the world. And I did a little bit of research. And by research, I mean I read a Wikipedia article titled Buddhist Cosmology.
That is fair.
The article does have sources, but it's not terribly well laid out, and it's a bit unclear which information is from which source, and some of the sources aren't in English, so I don't really know where this information is coming from, other than just Wikipedia, so yeah. According to Wikipedia, Jambudvipa is in the south, and shaped like a southern pointed triangle, so India, basically, it was like the concept for the mundane world for people who wrote these things. And that's where like normal humans live. Purvavide is in the east and is shaped like a semicircle with the flat side pointing westwards and the round side pointing eastwards. I wonder if that was like based on the shape of the Chinese coastline or if that's just a coincidence. But I don't know about that. But
interesting. I don't know how much mapping would have been done in that area during that time.
Yeah, the other two definitely don't really seem to correspond to anything. And these are usually drawn as completely separate places, like with oceans between them.
I mean, at that point, the Western world still had sea monsters on their maps. So.
Yeah, and probably people trading between India and China could. I don't know. I'm making this up, but I probably should have actually read a history book. But you know, it doesn't seem far fetched that they would have gone by sea routes rather than, you know, over the Himalayas.
Yeah, giant mountain range in the way does not sound fun.
Yeah, but according to, again, one little random paragraph on Wikipedia, the people in Porvavide are apparently 12 feet tall and live for 700 years, and they are mostly traders, and that's where Monkey is from in this novel.
Again, it's really interesting to see the commonalities across cosmologies, because I believe it's been a while since I read the Epic of Gilgamesh. I believe the immortals prior to that story were also incredibly tall.
Yeah.
And then obviously in the Bible, well, not obviously, but if you've read kind of the Old Testament and some of the measure around it, you've got the, I can't remember if it's Nephilim, but you've got the massive freaking giant people that God decides to, we gotta get rid of these fuckers, these bastard offspring between angels and humans, and just flood the place.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the ice giants in, you know, in Norse mythology. So I just think that's really cool that giants just seem to make an appearance everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty basic idea to come across, I guess. Like, what would make, like, a type of person that's scary and powerful, and it's just like, well, if they were just bigger.
Fair.
And maybe kind of an idea of, like, normal, everyday people being, like, children to them, maybe. I'm not sure.
I guess that's kind of a way of humbling yourself in front of the gods as well.
Also, the people in the next two continents get even more ridiculously huge.
Okay.
So in Paragadania is in the west, and it's shaped like a circle. And the people there are 24 feet tall, live for 500 years, and don't have houses. They just live outside, which is maybe the reason they don't live as long as the people from Porvavide. Maybe. And finally, there's Uttarakuru, which is in the north and shaped like a square. People there are 48 fucking feet tall, live for 1,000 years, live in cities in the air, they have no private property, and their food grows itself.
Amazing. So, fully automated luxury space communism with giants.
Yeah, pretty much. I actually had that written down in my notes as a joke to make.
Oh, I'm sorry, I stole your punchline.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's more natural. Great minds. And yeah, that's the world. That's the world in the understanding of this novel, I guess.
Yay, cosmology and world building.
But
always fun.
But to reiterate, all that stuff about being 48 feet tall and all this stuff, that's from a Wikipedia article, that's not from the book.
Okay.
That's just me like getting curious and doing some very lazy research.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, the second thing I looked up was unicorns, because, you know, if I'm reading a Chinese story, I understand what they mean when they say a dragon. They don't mean the kind of dragon that's like on the Welsh flag. They mean a different kind of thing. And I understand what like a Chinese dragon is. I have a vague idea of what a Chinese phoenix is. But when it said unicorn, I was like, wait, hold on. That's obviously not going to be like, that's not a horse with one horn, right? It's something, probably something else. So I looked it up, again, Wikipedia, but there is a mythological creature called a Quilin, Q-I-L-I-N. That's sometimes called a Chinese unicorn and translated as unicorn. But it doesn't look like a unicorn as a Western conception of like a unicorn. It looks more like a cross between a dragon and a deer, or like a dragon and a lion or an ox. It depictions vary a bit, but they generally have four legs, scales, and a dragon's head. Sometimes they have hooves, sometimes they have feet, and they have two horns, not one. So I have sent MJ pictures of this before, I think, but I'll do it again. If they've forgotten, they can give their reaction to it.
Okay. Oh, wow. That is not a unicorn in a conception as we know it, like, at all.
Yeah. If you're, when you're listening to this, just, like, feel free to, I can put some links in, like, episode notes, but, you know, also just type Q-I-L-I-N into Wikipedia to get a couple pictures of it. And I'm glad I looked it up because there's also a very interesting story about them, again, from Wikipedia. But during the Ming Dynasty in the early 1400s, a man named Zheng He traveled to East Africa and brought back various kind of exotic treasures and exotic creatures to present at the court in Nanjing, including two giraffes. And the court's reaction to the giraffes was basically, holy shit, he brought back Quilins. So, you can kind of see, like, it's like this thing that's kind of horse-like is meant to be scaly, has two horns, and giraffes have, like, the weird, like...
little bumps.
The little horn bumps, and the kind of pattern doesn't look like what you normally associate with furred, most furred animals initially in that.
The Quilin, is it Quilin or Chilin? Is it,
I am not positive.
Yeah, well, whichever. It doesn't have the long neck of a giraffe.
No.
I can see where it could be considered slightly giraffe-like.
And in Japanese and Korean, the word for Quilin and giraffe are still the same word.
Cool.
And they pronounce it slightly differently. So in Japanese, it's more like Kirin, with, like, it's spelled with a K. And in Korean, Girin. But yeah, they use the same word for giraffe and these things.
Huh.
I thought that was really interesting.
That is quite cool.
Yeah. So that's my footnotes, which, I don't know, do you think that works as kind of a way to end the episode, or is it too jarring?
No, I'd say they know they're coming. If you aren't interested in this type of world building, first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all, you can skip it.
Yeah.
It's not a...
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to put it at the end. Let people enjoy the monkey.
With lasers!
With the laser monkey.
I have no idea why I'm so fixated on the lasers.
It's fun. Lasers are fun. Gotta love the light amplified by the simulated emission of radiation.
Yes. So we'll wrap it up.
Cool. So, this show will probably have a Twitter account by the time I release this. Maybe I'll edit that into this outro at some point. But my Twitter account is Oakreef, OakReef. And MJ's is?
Mine is Taoiseach of Thrash. If you're not familiar with the Irish political system, first of all, congratulations. And second of all, that's spelled TAOISEACH, and then it's just trash. So that's me. I also have a couple of shows on the Hysteria Network. You can find Hysteria on Facebook. We put out lots of really cool, funny live content. I've got a show called Burning Shit with MJ Stokes, where I get people to talk about their feelings and then light something on fire. They Did What Now, where we talk about strange and ballsy moves from history, and The Nerd Herd, where I get comedians to just talk about things that they really, really love and are passionate about. So that's my plugs.
If you follow me on Twitter, you will find random nonsense and this podcast, I guess. It's hard to plug when I just, like, mostly just do a day job and I'm doing this on the side. It's like, if you go to my Twitter account, you will find me ranting about trying to write a Python script to conjugate regular verbs in Irish.
I really enjoyed that rant. Particularly the sentence, what was it? I will ferret out all your dirty little secrets, you stupid verbs.
I think it was you conjugated fuck.
Which was a delightful sentence for me to read. Oh, you conjugated fuck! How could I forget that? That's amazing. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you find it. I assume we're going to be on Spotify.
Yeah, that's something I also need to like figure out.
Yeah,
I might ask you about that. listen to this podcast where from wherever you are already listening to it from.
Yes.
I always find it funny when people say that in shows. It's like you can find us, well, find us however you found us already.
yeah, that's fair. Okay, so we'll wrap it up then. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you. And listeners, please listen to the next episode if you want to find out, does the Monkey King discover the secrets of immortality?